Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. 2 years ago, the coming-of-age love story told in Call Me By Your Name took the big screen by storm.
Elio, what are you doing?
Reading my music.
No, you're not.
Thinking, then?
Yeah? About what?
It's private.
You're not going to tell me?
I'm not going to tell you.
And that, of course, is Armie Hammer as Oliver and Timothy Chalamet as Elio in the movie based on Andre Aciman's 2007 novel of the same name. The story is timeless, such that we meet Elio and Oliver 20 years later in Find Me, the sequel by author Andre Aciman. He'll be discussing the book tonight at Brattle Theater in Cambridge. But first, he joins us in the studio now. Andre, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, before we start, here is your spoiler alert. I am going to say things that will tell you things about the book, so consider yourself forewarned now. All right. So, Andre, in Find Me, it's first 10, then 15, and 20 years after Elio and Oliver spent that life-changing summer together. And at this point, Elio's father, Samuel, is divorced. Elio is a professional pianist in Paris. Oliver is in New England as a college professor with a family and maybe not so happy. After all of the energy around Call Me By Your Name, with many wondering whether there would be a sequel and how you would do it, what made you bring us back to them again and in this way?
I wanted to go back to this book many years ago after finishing Call Me By Your Name, and I tried a few times, and it wasn't working because I was starting with Elio's voice, and Elio's voice is one of wanting and desiring, and since it's clear that he's not with Oliver and there's nothing he can do, the feel as that for the author, me, the narrator, felt that there was nothing for him to want that was relevant to the story. So I would abandon that. I tried it quite a few times. And in the end, I just gave up until one day I decided to write about a man in a train. I had no idea who this man in the train was. I began writing it, and eventually I knew he was going to see someone, and I decided he's going to see his son. Oh, and who could that son be? I have the characters already. Let's see what happens.
So you had a new story you wanted to write, and you realized that characters you'd already written could help you tell that story.
Yes, exactly.
And why so many years later? I mean, we are talking about decades after the last story left off. Was that incidental or important in the way you decided to write this sequel?
I think I wanted to see them grown up. I wanted to see Elio at the age of 27. I wanted to see him at the age of 32, 33. And I wanted to see Oliver at the age of 44 because I figured they have changed, or they have not changed for each other, but they have grown up. And so they know what the limitations that life throws your ways are. And therefore, they are wiser and a bit more tentative about themselves. They don't hurl into a relationship as they did when they were very young.
We wait half a book before we engage with them. And first, we engage very deeply with Elio's father.
Yes.
Why did he become, other than you knew you wanted to write about a man on a train, why was telling his story first the right way to bring us back to these lovers we had come to know in Call Me By Your Name?
Well, partly because there was no other way for me, with my limited imagination, to figure how to bring them back together without
giving them the idea of you having a limited imagination to be hard to believe.
Oh, you should know. You should find out. But I felt that there was something about the father that, who is this wise man who gave that wonderful speech, and why does he disappear so fast? Tell us more. That's what I wanted to explore more. And I wanted him to have a second chance at life. And maybe, who knows, the first chance at life, rather late in the day. And I also felt that there was something about him that told me that he was not done with his life. There was a lot of talk in that chapter, and it introduces the book, about time being not on our side, that time is wrong for us, or we are wrong for time, that sort of feeling. And that is sort of narrated by the father of the woman he meets on the train, who essentially introduces the idea of time and vigils and lost lives or lost opportunities, later to be re-evoked by Oliver when he speaks about the unlived life.
As I was reading Find Me, there were a number of times where I don't know how to describe this other than I felt like fatherhood itself was a character in the story. Mm-hmm. It was so present, so recurrent, sometimes in beautiful ways and sometimes in ways that made me very uncomfortable. You know, Elio at one point has a lover who seems very clearly to be a father figure to him at some level.
Yes.
And that lover compares Elio to his own son.
Yes.
So why is fatherhood so present in this story? And what are you hoping for us to learn from that?
It's not programmed in that way. It's that fatherhood seems to be a sort of enduring topic of concern for me, in the sense that I was close to my father, but I was much, much closer to my mother. And yet I have made most mothers either totally anonymous or even sometimes nasty. But it was my father that I had a problem with. And so for me, writing is a way of resolving or of placating this father figure who was not always happy with me and whom I did not always feel close to. So I create fathers who are far, far nicer to their sons, the way I wanted my father to be.
So as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the fact that so much of both of these stories feel to me to be about both the challenges and the pleasures of intimacy, of real
Yes.
intimacy between people. And historically and culturally, I think mothers are intimate with their children in a way that fathers aren't.
Yes.
And I wonder if there was some searching to create an intimacy in fiction that doesn't always exist for fathers and their children in real life.
I think writers do that. They do sort of reinvent their lives to a good degree, and I have. But my father was a very close person on certain levels. I think he was a very frank man, a severe, stern, and everything you want, but at the same time, extremely forgiving and open. So open that I think most of my sexual education came not from books, not from teachers, but from him, because he taught me many practical things about, you know, human sexuality, which nobody ever would even deign to teach you. And so it was very helpful to me to go into relationships knowing certain things that helped me.
So I want to shift gears now, because mm-hmm. I want to make sure our listeners get to hear you read a passage from
okay.
the book. It is not about fatherhood, but it is a striking passage. It's one where Oliver is having a conversation in his own head with, of all people, Johann Sebastian Bach. So maybe you can read that for us.
Sure. He's heard a piece of music by Bach, played by a young man whom he's attracted to. And of course, as soon as he hears that piece of music, which is the Capriccio, he realizes this is exactly the piece that Elio used to play for me and that I'd asked him to play. So here he says, they have a discussion about, does music change life? And so Bach asks them in a kind of demotic language, "Didn't change your life, did I?" says good old Johann Sebastian, "Afraid not." "And why not?" And so here is Oliver. "Music doesn't give answers to questions I don't know how to ask. It doesn't tell me what I want. It reminds me that I may still be in love, though I'm no longer sure I know what that means, being in love. I think about people all the time, yet I've hurt many more than I've cared for. I can't even tell what I feel. Oh, God, this is my phone."
As long as we all acknowledge it.
I thought I had put it off.
That part's not in the book, by the way, listeners. That was just a moment here in the studio. Please pick it right back up.
Yes. "I think about people all the time, yet I've hurt many more than I've cared for. I can't even tell what I feel, though feel something I still do, even if it's more like a sense of absence and loss, maybe even failure, numbness, or total unknowing. I was sure of myself once. I thought I knew things, knew myself, and people loved that I reached out to them when I blustered into their lives and didn't even ask or doubt that I mightn't be welcome. Music reminds me of what my life should have been, but it doesn't change me. Perhaps, says the genius Bach, music doesn't change us that much, nor does great art change us. Instead, it reminds us of who, despite all our claims or denials, we've always known we were and are destined to remain. It reminds us of the mileposts we've buried and hidden and then lost, of the people and things that matter despite our lies, despite the years. Music is no more than the sound of our regrets put to a cadence that stirs the illusion of pleasure and hope. it's the surest reminder that we're here for a very short while and that we've neglected or cheated, or worse yet, failed to live our lives. Music is the unlived life. You've lived the wrong life, my friend, and almost defaced the one you were given to live.
In the end, nobody in Find Me lives the wrong life.
I think that's why they're so lucky, because they decide to live the life that is right for them. And I think that is, if there is a message to my book, is find the life that is right for you, and then have the courage, the boldness, the cheek to live the life you want.
Do you think most people do?
No.
Yeah. So I have to talk about what's uncomfortable. One of the notable themes in Call Me By Your Name and in Find Me are age differences. Mm-hmm. We already touched on fatherhood. There have been strong critiques that the 17-year-old Elio and the 24-year-old Oliver cannot be engaged in a great love story, but instead, because of their age differentials, must be engaged in an abusive or coercive relationship. In Find Me, you very clearly return to age difference again and again in telling stories of love. So given those critiques, why?
Well, first of all, who cares about the critiques?
Well, we'll come back to that in a minute.
But let's go and answer the critiques. First of all, these are characters who are, of course, of consensual age. These are consensual relationships. They're old enough. She is in her 30s. And so is Elio, and he is in his 50s, so that's fine. What happens is that I believe that if you're a writer who writes cookie-cutter novels, you'll pick people who are the same age, who met at a party, given by people the same age, end of story. I like unconventional relationships. I like things that are undisclosed from one another. I like people who are intelligent enough to have an intelligent conversation. And I like a sort of unfettered passion. And so here you have two individuals. Let's take the first two. A woman who has had a lot of relationships and who knows what she wants and is disappointed by most men and finds this man wiser than most of her boyfriends, finds him this sort of even-tempered, even easy to be close to and intimate, and she wants to hear more of what he has to say. I don't think she's sort of physically attracted to him. Maybe not at first, but certainly his mind is something almost sort of provokes her into finding something that she hasn't found. And he, of course, finds in her the exact opposite of who he is. She has energy. She has passion. She is spunky, sometimes insolent about many things. And he finds that refreshing. So, yes, they have age differences, but they are attracted to each other precisely because they are opposites.
When I think about Elio and Oliver, let me backtrack for a second. We don't have a lot of time, so I want to do this part quickly. You said, who cares about the critiques? Mm-hmm. Your stories are designed clearly to evoke so much in people. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with it invoking moral or ethical questions as well?
Well, first of all, because it's not that I don't believe in morality, but I leave those issues to other people. I am more interested in what really happens to human beings, and what is a human being? I think we are all of us vessels of paradoxes, contradictions, incoherences. And most people on Earth are that way. They're trying to resolve who they are because they're looking for a core identity, a core relationship. In fact, I think we're not made for life, as it were, to use the language of Miranda's father. We are wrong for many things. And so trying to situate ourselves into these obvious sort of cookie cutter situations doesn't help us at all. It just makes us live better lives, maybe more coherent lives. But we are not coherent unto ourselves. And when we go to bed at night and we close our eyes and are really alone with ourselves, we know that what is missing. We know that we may never fill those gaps and so on.
Andre Assaman, the author of Call Me By Your Name and its sequel Find Me, which is out now. He'll be discussing his new novel tonight at Brattle Theatre in Cambridge, followed by a special screening of Call Me By Your Name. The event is sold out, but there will be a standby line, and you can find a link to more information at radioboston.org. Andre Assaman, thank you for being
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.